All right, then. Friday, 5 p.m., rolling to the end of yet another week in our lives. Glad to have made it. It's the best time of the week, Friday, 5 p.m., time for
Double happy hour.
That's right. Time for American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHBC.
We haven't been counting that.
Right.
Wow.
Throw that in. You get Friday, 5 p.m., and you get American Hit Radio. Whap, whap, whap. All right, then. Thanks for tuning in and joining us. I'm Tom Ryan. That's my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, of course, with us as well. And we've been doing this How Music Changed series on Fridays really since the beginning of time. I think we started this in the caveman era. Still going strong. And we've been going through a bunch of different series. And the one we're starting on that we started a few weeks ago, we're naming it after the show, American Hit Radio Radio Days, covering the era from 1955 until 1969, pop radio, and what's been going on. This is show number 7 in that series. And we're going to cover the era of late 1957 with today's show. At this point, rock and roll started, basically just continued to grow and spread unabated throughout the year 1957, really, to the point where seemingly unrelated genres started to be identified as rock and roll. Things like Harlem doo-wop, country harmony records, even crooners were now associated with this raucous youth movement. Such was its power that pretty much every song in today's program, except for one, would have fit under the rock and roll umbrella. So let's get down to it and start with an artist that we haven't covered in this series yet, from 1955 until now. Now, for somebody who only had 3 top 10 hits in his entire lifetime, Buddy Holly has had a profound influence on popular music that by far exceeds his chart presence. He arrived on the music scene at a time when most rock and rollers were beginning to sound, dare I say it, predictable, maybe even formulaic. The major artists, Elvis Presley, Little Richard, Fats Domino, they lost their ability to surprise their audience, and their formats became somewhat predictable. You knew what to expect from Elvis. It was either going to be a slow ballad or an up-tempo rocker. Fats Domino was as consistent as they get. That'll Be the Day, released in the summer of 57, was a breath of fresh air for a music scene that had begun to grow stale. The solid body Fender Telecaster guitar was a huge change, which Holly played, and it was a new instrument. The electric bass guitar gave the Crickets a thoroughly modern, unique look and sound that eventually were used by virtually every rock and roll band that followed. Here is a track credited to the Crickets called That'll Be the Day on 90.3 WHPC.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie. Cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, you give me all your loving and your dirt of loving, all your hugs and kisses and your money too. Well, you know you love me, baby. Still, you tell me maybe that someday, well, I'll be through. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie. Cause that'll be the day when I die. Shot is dark, he shot it at your heart. So if we ever part, then I'll leave you. You sit and hold me and you tell me boldly that someday, well, I'll be through. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day When you make me cry, you say you're gonna leave. You know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, that'll be the day. Ooh, ooh, that'll be the day. Ooh, ooh, that'll be the day. Ooh, ooh, that'll be the day.
That's a single that almost never was. It's an interesting story. The backstory for Buddy Holly on this is that he was in a band with a friend called Bob Montgomery. They just were billed as Buddy and Bob. And while they were playing, Buddy Holly was offered a contract by Decca Records as a solo artist. He wasn't going to take it. Bob convinced him that he should. Nice guy, doing the right thing. So Holly traveled to Nashville to record with Decca. But what he found out right quick was that Decca wanted nothing to do with rock and roll. They didn't really want that from him at all. So he pretty much had to do what he was told. And he recorded a non-rock and roll single, and it bombed. And then, as a result, Decca refused to release anything else that he recorded. So he was dropped. He ended up going back to Texas with his tail between his legs as a failure. The only good thing that came out of it was he teamed up with his drummer, Jerry Allison. So they go back, and now they're in Texas, and they meet this guy, Norman Petty, who's got a recording studio in not too far away in Clovis, New Mexico. So he and Jerry Allison go in, and they re-record some of the songs that Decca refused to release. One of them happened to be That'll Be the Day. Now, it was decided that it would be unwise to use Buddy Holly's name in the credits because he was already signed to Decca and there could have been a lawsuit. So they ended up grabbing a dictionary and they ended up coming up with the name The Crickets. And
well, what's quieter than a cricket?
Right. A good way to keep it hush-hush, right? You know, good point. So they end up getting the interest of Coral Records, who loved the song, but they also weren't particularly interested in rock and roll. So then they arranged to go from Coral to their subsidiary label, Brunswick. So Brunswick is the label that releases That Will Be the Day. Now, by sheer coincidence, Coral and Brunswick were both subsidiaries of Decca.
Oh, how funny.
The label that dropped them in the first place. So when the song became a huge hit and Decca learned that The Crickets was really Buddy Holly, they wanted to sue, but it would have been stupid because they essentially would be suing themselves. So the whole thing just became a non-issue, and Buddy Holly ended up with the number one records, and Decca really ended up with a little bit of egg on their face. That's about it.
Well,
meanwhile,
egg on their plate.
Right, right, exactly. But more than enough. Meanwhile, up in Harlem, a group called the Bobettes decided to write sort of a smarmy tune about a teacher that they had that they didn't like very much. They came to the attention of Atlantic Records, who thought that they were great. You know, they were literally the type. They would sing like in the schoolyard. They'd sing on the street. It was as rootsy as you could possibly imagine. And these were, you know, high school kids. And one of their teachers, but what Atlantic didn't like was the lyrics. They didn't like that they were saying about that he was the ugliest teacher in the world. So they decided that let's change some of these words around. Let's make him the handsomest, things like that, to make it kind of hip. Now, they got discovered because, just like it happened so much in those days, they were playing at Apollo Theater's amateur night, and Atlantic was there and signed them to a contract. So they grabbed this as their single with rewritten lyrics, and this is years before the whole girl group phenomenon happened. In a way, you could say that it began with the Bobettes. They were the first girl group to release a number one R&B hit that also made the pop top 10 and began to put this idea of girl group singing rock and roll into people's heads. Here they are singing Mr. Lee on 90.3 WHPC.
Look at Mr. Lee, 3, 4, 5. Look at him jive, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee. Oh, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee. Oh, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee. Oh, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee. I've met my sweetie, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee. His name is Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee. I've met my sweetie, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee.
I love that record. Those girls are genuinely really good. It's a raw record, and
yes,
they sing great. And they eventually got their revenge. It wasn't a big hit, but they did release a follow-up single called I Shot Mr. Lee.
Oh, no.
Now,
that's not nice.
Pretty funny.
They weren't really nice girls. That's what I'm getting.
I think last week we covered the debut of the Everly Brothers with Bye Bye Love, a song written by Felice and Boudelot Bryant, a married couple that was just really, again, adept at writing songs about the younger generation, sort of like what Chuck Berry was doing by himself. They did it again here for Phil and Don Everly with their second hit single, which immediately became a number one hit in 1957. Such were the times that a song as innocent as this, a song that we almost laugh about its innocence when we hear it today, was banned in certain radio stations
for
because
its coded message.
The lyrics were considered suggestive. Unbelievable. About a young couple going to the movies, and the movie wasn't so hot, and they fell asleep, and then they woke up, and now it's way past their curfew time, and he was supposed to have her home, and they're fretting about it. What's more innocent than that? Yet, it's the way times were. Number one hit for the Everly Brothers, their second hit single. Here's Wake Up Little Susie on 90.3 WHBC.
Wake up, little Susie, wake up. Wake up, little Susie, wake up. Wake up, please.
we'd like to remind you, you're listening to American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHBC.
Thank you. I forgot where I was for a second. Excellent. All right, that is the case. This is American Radio. I'm Tom Ryan. That's Heidi Morales Ryan with us as well. We're going through our series called Transistor Days, playing songs between 1955 and 1969, hit singles from the days of transistor radio. And up next, let's see, we covered two songs last week because they were both released within 2 weeks of each other by Johnny Mathis. He's back again on the charts very quickly in September of 1957, yet another number one hit from the latter part of the year. This song is probably one of the reasons why the album Johnny's Greatest Hits was on the charts for as long as it was, because it was chock full of hits before they even were hits when the album was released. This is one of them. It's weird because Johnny Mathis has this very unusual croon, and it caused the mainstream audience pretty much to abandon him. The rock and roll kids were more than happy to latch on and make him part of the group. So again, rock and roll even now has a crooner to fatten out the stylistic range of what rock and roll was actually standing for. Here's Johnny Mathis with Chances Are on 90.3 WHPC.
Chances are, 'cause I wear a silly grin the moment you come into view. Chances are you think that I'm in love with you. Just because my composure sort of slips the moment that your lips meet mine, chances are you think my heart's your valentine. In the magic of moonlight, when I sigh, hold me close, dear. Chances are stars that fill the skies are in my eyes. Guess you feel you'll always be the one and only one for me. And if you think you could, well, chances are your chances are awfully good.
About that song in conjunction with all the other songs that have been played is that it shows the diversity of what was on radio.
Right. I couldn't agree more. And like I'm saying, the diversity of what was under the rock and roll umbrella. I mean, it was so awesome that you could love like something like the girl group from Harlem and Johnny Mathis stylistically eons apart. But it was cool because this is before the music became too fragmented. It became a genre that took a lot of things into it, rather than having it chopped up into pieces and divided among a whole variety of stations, or you don't dial in onto your own special channel to hear exactly what it is that you wanted to hear. You were given a variety of music, and it was wonderful to hear a variety of music. Fair enough. All right. That, of course, Johnny Mathis singing Chances Are, playing music through the latter half of 1957 at this point. And nobody's going to deny that one of the main inspirations for R&B music from this era has been gospel music. And in fact, it's more common to find artists to say that that is their background than it's to find those who would say otherwise. But usually it's like people like Sam Cooke Ray Charles, who they'll probably mention as being like an obvious progenitor for that. But Sam Cooke was one of the first too. In 1951, he became the lead singer for the Soul Stirrers. R.H. Harris was the original singer for the band, and he decided to retire, which Sam Cooke came in to replace him, and he immediately became a star as the lead singer for the Soul Stirrers. He was a great songwriter. He wasn't only a great singer, he was a fabulous songwriter. He wrote songs like Touch the Hem of His Garment, which if you don't know it, find it.
It's beautiful.
It wasn't a pop, but my gosh, is that incredible. So Specialty Records know they've got a really good thing going with Sam Cooke as a gospel singer. But the artistic director for Specialty, Bumps Blackwell, figured that, you know, this guy could cross over to pop, no problem. So he starts to suggest that he records a couple of pop songs. Basically, you know, instead of saying he, you can say she, and it'll mix it up. It's not that big of a deal. But they were worried about hurting his career, so they were very cautious. Bumps Blackwell gave him a song called Lovable, but they credited it to Dale Cooke, making it like it was somebody else. It's Sam Cooke's voice. Nobody was fooled at all. And this annoyed the label head, Art Rupee, because he figured that, you know, a gospel star dabbling in pop music was going to alienate his core audience. So he refused to release it. Would not put the record out. So now Blackwell was like, okay, what do I do? How do I go against my boss? Well, he took the song. He didn't go against his boss. He took the song to a different label, Keen Records. Said, let's see if they'll release it. Well, of course they did. And, well, instantly a number one smash. From that point forward, Sam Cooke was a pop star. Here's the song that did it for him. It's called You Send Me on 90.3 WHPC.
Darling, you send me. I know you send me. Darling, you. Honest you do, honest you do, honest you do. Whoa, you thrill me. I know you thrill me. Darling, you thrill me. Honest you do. At first I thought it was infatuation. But ooh, it's lasted so long. Now I find myself wanting to marry you and take you home. Whoa, you send me. I know you send me. But ooh, it's lasted so long. Now I find myself wanting to marry you
and take you home. I know, I know, I know. Send me, I know you. Send me, oh, oh, you, you, you. Send me, honest.
What an era this was, right?
Fantastic. I mean,
this is just unbelievable. I can't even find, like, you know, I would sometimes sprinkle the list with bad songs just to, like, round it out. But there's so many good ones that the bad ones are irrelevant. It's just incredible. All of this from, like, a few months in 1957. By the way, that track was written by Sam Cooke's brother, L.C. Cooke. But you didn't know that.
No, I did not.
Right. You're listening to American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC, counting our way from 1955 up until 1969 through the pop hits, some of the best singles of the best period of time for hit singles, I would say, the golden era, 1955 to 1969. We're going to work our way through it. All right. Next up. No sooner had Elvis Presley become the center of attention for all of youth culture that he began to get involved with that bastion of cultural mediocrity, Hollywood. RCA had, at this point, they'd only released three of his singles, Heartbreak Hotel, I Want You, I Need You, I Love You, and Don't Be Cruel, backed by Hound Dog. That was it so far. Now, his manager at this point already, Colonel Tom Parker, set up a three-picture deal with Paramount Studios, and the effect on Elvis's music was almost immediate. More often than not, the songs that appeared in the movies were picked indiscriminately with no relation at all to the storyline. Usually they were inserted into the film for no better reason than to prove that Elvis could sing better than he could act. Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller, obviously two of the most incredibly talented songwriters of this era, young kids that had already written hits for Elvis and the Coasters and numerous others, were more than adequate at knowing their way around writing a rock and roll tune. But they really outdid themselves at this point, trying to come up with something for Elvis in his films. This next song is a rave-up rock and roller about a co-ed prison dance party.
Amazing.
Like, what? Really? Who's bringing the coke? Oh, man. How Elvis could sing these words with conviction is a testament to his talent. He attacks the song with a powerful, raspy edge that was basically provided the textbook standard eventually used by people like John Lennon and Bruce Springsteen. It starts really with Elvis Presley and this immensely silly but awesome song called Jailhouse Rock on 90.3 WHPC.
One threw a party in the county jail. The prison band was there, they began to wail. The band was jumping and the joint began to swing. You should have heard this knocked out jailbird sing. Let it rock. Everybody let it rock. Everybody in old cell block was dancing to the jailhouse rock. Spider Murphy played his tenor saxophone. Little Joe was blowing on the slide trombone. The drummer boy from Illinois would crash, boom, bang. The whole rhythm section was a purple gang. Let it rock. Everybody let it rock. Use a wooden chair, let it rock. Everybody, let it rock.
No one's looking at a chance to make a break. But you turned and shifted and he said, nix, nix. I wanna stick around, I wanna get my kick. Let it rock. Everybody, let it rock. Everybody in old cell block. Well, Danny do the jail, let it rock. 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 Danny do the jail, let it rock.
As silly it is, that song will never, ever become tiresome.
This is American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC. And remember, if you can't find a partner, use a wooden chair.
All right, awesome. By the way, also, if you're interested in hearing some of our previous shows, if you're liking the series, we save all of them on our website. Go to AmericanHitNetwork.com. It's very easy to navigate. You'll find out. You'll find your way around very easily. Now, everything we're playing on this show so far, actually, everything we will be playing on this show today certainly qualifies as a rock and roll song with one exception, and it's time for that exception right now. When he was 37 years old, it wasn't a very good year for Frank Sinatra. In fact, 1952 was awful. His marriage to Ava Gardner was in a shambles. He lost his movie contract. Television ignored him. He was let go by his record company. And as the final insult, his agency even dropped him. They wouldn't even handle him anymore. Hundreds, perhaps thousands of artists have experienced similar fates, falling into that dark void of has-beendom. And once you're in its clutches, it's an easy destiny. It's not an easy destiny to get out of. You know, Frank Sinatra did come back, not only with a stronger voice, but also with a reinvented persona to match, a testament to his strength of will and self-determination. When he was at rock bottom, he managed to virtually beg his way into landing a non-singing role of Private Maggio in the film From Here to Eternity.
Great movie.
Right. It gave him the one opportunity that he needed to prove himself to a doubting public. And he played the role as though his very life depended on it, which in a sense it did. If he wanted to continue his career as a singer, though, he desperately needed to get himself affiliated with a record company. Columbia, you know, booted him out unceremoniously. So after his disastrous parting with that label, companies were not exactly waiting in line to sign him. Capitol Records in Los Angeles had grown from a very small independent in 1942 and had become fairly large and capable of competing with the major labels like Columbia and RCA. Now, although Sinatra was considered a major risk, Capitol signed him with unusually strict contract terms. He was to receive no advance for recording fees, and if he were unproductive, his contract would expire in 12 months.
Wow.
It's like put up or shut up time. This is for a guy who was one of the most popular singers of the previous decade.
Well, he put up anyway, so.
Well, the big change that came with going to Capitol was him getting linked up with Nelson Riddle. It proved to be one of the most productive pairings in modern music history. But it almost didn't happen. Sinatra wanted to continue to work with Axel Stordahl, which was the man responsible for his frothy Columbia sessions, stylistically. But Stordahl was unavailable. So Sinatra had no choice but to change his style, so to speak. Billy May, his second choice, was also bound by previous obligations. So the task of handling what was hoped to be his musical comeback fell to Nelson Riddle. But because he wanted to please Sinatra, Riddle wrote four different arrangements for Sinatra, two of which were identifiable as his own, and another two that deliberately aped Billy May's style. So on the record, they were even credited to May, even though he had nothing to do with it. So Sinatra's, you know, single release became a bestseller in 1954. That was Young at Heart, won an Academy Award. So now they're coming up with these, like, again, frothy hit singles for him. Things like Love and Marriage, Love is the Tender Trap, Hey, Jealous Lover. Not bad songs, but disposable stuff. You know, you're going to get tired of songs like that. 1957, though, was with things that began to change. All the Way was written by Jimmy Van Heusen and Sammy Kahn for the film The Joker's Wild. And it's an older, more self-assured Frank Sinatra who sings the song. And you can feel it. It may go against the grain of rock and roll, but it was perfect for its times. From October 1957, a number two hit for Frank. on 90.3 WHPC. Here's Frank Sinatra with All the Way.
When somebody loves you, it's no good unless he loves you. All the way. Happy to be near you when you need someone to cheer you. All the way. Taller than the tallest trees, that's how it's got to feel. Deeper than the deep blue sea is, that's how deep it goes, if it's real. When somebody needs you, it's no good unless he needs you. All the way. Through the good or lean years, and for all the in-between years, come what may. Who knows where the road will lead us, only a fool would say. But if you let me love you, it's for sure I'm gonna love you all the way. All the way. Let me love you, it's for sure I'm gonna love you all the way, all the
This is American at Radio on 90.3 WHPC, and that, as though you need to be told, was Frank Sinatra singing All the Way, of course. All right, we're going counting our way through the latter part of 1957 on our series called Transistor Days, American Hit Radio, and the next song comes about in a rather roundabout way. The artist is Thurston Harris. He was in an R&B band called the Lamplighters, eventually changed their name to the Tenderfoots, then to the Sharps. The Sharps would go on to become the Rivingtons. You might remember the song Papa Oomow Mow. That was credited to the Rivingtons. That was Thurston Harris. So here, Thurston just starts to do his version of a song that's written by Bobby Day. Bobby Day, you probably remember, is a guy that wrote the hit record Rockin' Robin. Another hit from this era. I didn't include it because, quite frankly, I'm trying to pick my absolute top favorites or the absolute.
And there's so many.
There's so many. So I'm trying to stick to, like, you know, that certain level. But Bobby Day was quite a good songwriter. Not only was he responsible, he didn't write Rockin' Robin, but that was his big solo hit. But he did. Remember the Dave Clark 5 song, Over and Over?
Yeah, sure.
That was written by Bobby Day. He also happened to write this song that became a hit for Thurston Harris. In 1957, October of 1957, a top 10 hit, by the way, number 6, a song called Little Bitty Pretty One on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Mm-hmm.
one-hit wonder, pretty much, Thurston Harris, outside of his groups, of course, that I mentioned earlier, with the track Little Bitty Pretty One on 90.3 WHPC. All right.
This is American Hit Radio, if you're just tuning in.
Oh, thank you for that. And where was I? Well, you know, I don't think we covered any instrumental tracks yet, the Rock and Roar. I think that this next track might be the first rock and roll instrumental hit record, at least, anyway. It's by a guy named Bill Justice, originally a trumpet and sax player. Eventually, you know, Sam Phillips at Sun Records brought him in. And when that happened, he actually was the guy who was arranging music at Sun for Jerry Lee Lewis, Roy Orbison, Johnny Cash, Charlie Rich. And then he picked up this track. It was originally going to be called Backwards. That was the name of the song until when he was playing it for people. The one word that they kept using was, man, that track is raunchy. So we decided he decided to take them up on it, and it became a hit. Actually, it became a number two hit in the late fall of 1957. Here, then, on 90.3 WHPC is Bill Justice singing raunchy on American Radio. Radio on 90.3 WHPC. That track was Raunchy by Bill Justice. You know, that's the song, by the way, that got George Harrison hired in the Beatles. They picked them up and they went up onto the top of a double-decker bus. They made George take out his guitar and say, do something, play Raunchy. So he did. He played that lick and John was impressed enough to say, okay, you're in.
The fact that he knew it off the top of his head on demand probably had something to do with it.
Right. But, I mean, it was really influential. I mean, the whole Duane Eddy thing with producer Lee Hazelwood, that all came from this track. It was a matter of basically taking – it was a hit sound. So Duane Eddy made a career out of imitating that song. All right. Back to Buddy Holly again.
Back to where we started.
Pretty much. Exactly. Right. It was a. I told you about the strangeness of what happened with the record label earlier in the show when we played the first song. Now,
you're on Decca. You're not on Decca, but you are on Decca.
Right, exactly. So, or Coral, Brunswick. What is it? So, what happened is Buddy Holly and the Crickets ended up having a very unusual arrangement with their record labels. Songs that required backing vocals were credited to the Crickets and released on Brunswick. Well, solo vocal recordings were credited to Buddy Holly and released on Brunswick's parent label, Coral. This is more ridiculous than it sounds, though, because the Crickets almost never sang on any of the backing vocals. That was usually professional singing groups that came in to do it. So it was ludicrous. Regardless, this next song, Buddy Holly and his drummer recording this one, a song that Buddy had written called Cindy Lou, until Jerry Allison said, hey, man, change the name to my girlfriend. I think that'd be cool. So Buddy obliged, and what became a hit is a song entitled Peggy Sue on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then you know why I feel blue without Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, girlies. I love you, Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue. Oh, how my heart yearns for you. Oh, Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, girlies. I love you, Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue. Pretty, 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 pretty Peggy Sue. Oh, oh, Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, gal, and I need you, Peggy Sue.
I love you, Peggy Sue, with a love so rare and true. Oh, Peggy, my Peggy Sue. I want you, Peggy Sue. I need you, Peggy Sue. I love you, Peggy Sue, with a love so rare and true. Oh, Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, gal, and I want you, Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, gal, and I want.
Would have never had the same ring with Carol Lou.
Cindy Lou.
Cindy Lou.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I guess it's that or you just get used to it. But yeah, it rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yes.
You're listening to American at Radio on 90.3 WHBC. Tom Ryan and Heidi Morales Ryan here with you, working our way through 1957, which is such a obviously a glorious era for pop music. And now we end up with a song, yet another rock and roll anthem. Such was its popularity that these songs dedicated to the spirit of rock and roll were just falling out all over the place. yet another one by Chuck Berry, a song that was so strong that it even became one of the biggest recordings for the Beatles later on in their career. But as I said, a huge anthemic hit for Chuck Berry as well, simply entitled Rock and Roll Music on 90.3 WHPC.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it. It's gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me. If you wanna dance with me. I have no kick against modern jazz. Unless they try to play it too darn fast. And change the beauty of the melody. Until it sounds just like a symphony. That's why I go for that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it. It's gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me. If you wanna dance with me. I tell
took my loved one over across the tracks so she could hear my man a wailing sax. I must admit they have a rocking band. Man, they were blowing like a hurricane. That's why I go for that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it. It's gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me. If you wanna dance with me. Way down south they gave a jubilee. Then don't you folks, they had a jamboree. They're drinking home from a wooden cup. The folks dancing got all shook up and started playing that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it. It's gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me. If you wanna dance with me. Don't care to hear them play a tango. I'm in the mood to dig a mambo. Way too early for the Congo. So keep a rocking that piano so I can hear some of that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it. It's gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me. If you wanna dance with me.
Whew, that could be found on an album called One Dozen Berries. Something that was not really part of the rock and roll movement yet, albums. Albums were not big sellers. They were more expensive than singles. Kids loved the 45 RPM record. And all of these songs featured in this series, in this entire series, the Transistor Days, is going to be based upon songs that became hit records. There you go. All right, next up. A track by, let's see, I don't know, a Philadelphia, from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which was kind of perfect place for them to be because Danny and the Juniors were in the right place at the right time. They had a song called Do the Bop. And this guy named Dick Clark, who had the show called American Bandstand, based out of Philadelphia, had heard it and picked up on it. And he suggested that they change the chorus from Let's All Do the Bop to Let's Go to the Hop. The band was more than willing to oblige. And so long as Dick Clark was going to get 50% of the proceeds from publishing, then he'd be happy to play the record on his radio show.
Nice.
That's exactly
hey,
what happened.
Good deal.
Lucky for him, he was able to sell his rights to the song before the Payola scandal in 1960. So he came out
squeaky clean.
Squeaky clean. Danny and the Juniors with At the Hop on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Well, you can rock and you can roll and do the stop and even stroll it at the hop. When the record starts spinning, you chill it, so when you're chicken at the hop. Do the dance sensations that are sweeping the nation at the hop. Let's go to the hop. Let's go to the hop.
Oh, baby.
Let's go to the hop.
Oh, baby.
Let's go to the hop.
Mama.
Let's go to the hop. Well, you can swing it, you can groove it, you can really start to move it at the hop. Where the jockey is the smoothest and the music is the coolest at the hop. All the cats and the
right. There you have it. We've just pretty much completed another hour. So we will return next week as we continue with our series called, Radio Days, or I basically American Radio Transistor Days, picking up with the year 1958. We'll leave you with a teaser of where we're going to be taking you next week. And meanwhile, have a great weekend, everyone. See you then. Bye-bye.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much of love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. I let you love what I thought it was funny. You came along and moved me, honey. I've changed my mind, this love is fine. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. Kisses, baby.